views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
So no further ado, we want to bring on our scholar, our teacher, our doctor, our sister, our elder, and our mama, Dr. Frances Kress Welsing. All right.
Thank you very, very, very much. Can you hear me? Okay. Okay, good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
I am honored to have been invited to join you this evening to talk about ourselves as black people and to talk about the issues that we are facing. I decided to entitle my remarks, "The Noose, the Swastika, and the Burning Cross." The Noose, the Swastika, and the Burning Cross. I have been talking about racism, white supremacy, for the last, I hate to say it, 37 years. And it has been interesting to me because many people, many of my colleagues in psychiatry have said racism was a part of the past. And black people do not have to talk about racism anymore. And why is that Dr. Frances Welsing continuing to beat on the drum about racism, white supremacy? So even though it is an evil and an injustice to see hanging nooses, I'm glad that they are appearing, because it is an opportunity for us to get oriented. Do you see, those of us who were hoping that the problem had disappeared? Do you see, but if a problem is not solved, it continues to resurface. Do you see, so we are not only seeing Jenna, Louisiana, we are also seeing nooses being hung everywhere. And we are also seeing an individual who recently won the Nobel Prize, James Watson, do you see, of great scientific fame, come out and openly state that black people are genetically inferior in terms of intelligence compared to white people. And I'm happy about that. Do you see, now when he was confronted, he said he didn't know why those words came out of his mouth. I need to invite him to my office. Because it wasn't long ago, although it's been decades ago, that I debated another Nobel Prize laureate, Dr. William Shockley, the person who won the Nobel Prize for inventing the transistor. And he was going around in the 1970s talking about black people were genetically inferior compared to white people. But I had written a paper that I presented in 1970 at the National Medical Association, because then some of my colleagues were talking about racism. And I had written a paper talking about why do people who classify themselves as white have to demean and degrade black people's genetics. And that paper was entitled The Crest Theory of Color Confrontation and Racism, White Supremacy. And in that paper, I talked about the fact that when people who classify themselves as white keep saying something is wrong with black people's genetics, see, three of their fingers are pointing back at themselves. I didn't invent any genetics. I just simply thought about the things that I had been taught in their institutions and in medical school. That the inability to produce skin pigmentation is defined not by Francis Welsing, but by their own scientists as a genetic recessive trait and a genetic deficiency. A genetic deficiency, and it is albinism. A-L-B-I-N-I-S-M, albinism. Meaning the cells in everybody's skin that are called melanocytes, that are charged with the production of melanin pigment, the black pigment. If you have a lot of melanin, you're crystal black, a little bit less, you look brown, a little bit less, you look red, a little bit less, you look yellow, and white is almost none at all. Now, they had defined albinism as a genetic deficiency state when they were talking about mice and rats and other forms of life. They never thought that some black person would come along and say, if the majority of the people on the planet have pigmented skins, then as far as human beings are concerned, white skin is albinism. Do you follow what I'm saying? See, in other words, they were busy saying something is wrong with you, when in reality there was something wrong with them. And I explained that this is the reason that they suntan. You see, trying to create color. And I'm updating it and saying now that this is the reason that so many of them are trying to cover their bodies with tattoos. See, now we need to think about that, because sometimes monkey see, monkey do. And we don't understand why. See, it's like they do something, we think we have to do something. It's some black people who think that they have to get in the sun and tan too. See, but we have been blessed by the Creator with color. And indeed and in fact, the Creator made us the chosen people, in that we are the mothers and fathers of everybody on this planet. You see, and as the original people, we were crystal black people. The color that we have been taught to hate under racism, white supremacy. You see, but this not only explained the suntanning and maybe now the tattooing, but I said, this is the core of racism. And this is why racism contains within it, it's dynamic, the need to destroy black people in general, but black men in particular. You see, and we are seeing that. with the high level of incarceration of black men, with the dropping out of school and the high levels of unemployment. And that goes back to the fact that black men are perceived as the persons who can cause white genetic annihilation.
All right, this is the Code Breakers. Can everybody hear me?
Yes, sir. Look, you have a little bit of an echo there. Probably want to say something else again.
You hear the echo?
You good to go. No, you good. You good. Go ahead.
All right, this is the Code Breakers. I got DC and I think T is on the line as well.
I'm here.
Is T there? D there? Good, good, good. DC the consciousness killer.
Oh, you're gonna actually do that. Wow. That's CK? Name calling. Go ahead.
Y'all enjoying this 4th of July Independence Day?
Well, just like
I get back in
the day the Lord has made.
Turn these hot dogs over on the grill, man.
You're
holding me up.
What did
he say?
He said he has some hot dogs he wanted to fry on that grill, you know, and celebrate, you know, happy White Supremacist Day. That's what I call it. The granddaddy of all holidays, the reason why you have a formal system of racism, white supremacy across this planet is strictly because of this particular day allowing the 13 colonies to separate and form whiteness here on this particular part of the globe, landmass, the world, whatever you want to call it, and form made into the United States, which would become known as the Western world, which would also become known as the greatest superpower as of the modern era as we come to know it today. The 13 colonies, 1776, July 4th. Of course, we know that there was still free labor, extreme free labor at that particular time, that wasn't so hidden. Just like Mr. Reed always reminds us, slavery has yet to be completely abolished as long as they have plantation prisons currently active today. So that should never be forgotten about. Do you want to give out our information just in case some people would have some following disagreements, which we do welcome, disagreements, concerns? Gripes.
Yeah, you can. They can always call in at 1-866-510-9025 and hit star to comment. And they can also catch us on Twitter at Codebreakers 191. And of course, they can always go to blacktalkradionetwork.com and find the Codebreakers. You'll find our podcast there as well. You can also peruse the site, go to BTR community, look at some of the discussions there as well.
Very constructive. And also our email address where you can reach us if you have like a more direct concern about the program and you want to get any kind of response offline. You can reach us at codebreakers1999@gmail.com.
Hey, do you feel a little strange as you get deeper into having these discussions on air that when you mention I know you don't think about the internet you don't think about the superhighway itself or databases as anything, but when you put brands on them like, you know, YouTube or Twitter or whatever, or even using a Gmail account, or really using anything online, do you feel a little off in the back of your mind? as far as knowing who owns it, you know, what they're, who they are, what they're made of. And what's funny even about that, not to go this way with things, but I was thinking it was funny how the federal government is having to bring them in, you know, the social media people, having to bring them in and whip them into shape. So they can make sure they follow all the proper rules and things that they put in place to protect us.
T, you wanted to tackle that first, or you want me to go first?
Yeah. I apologize if there's like background noise, but I'm out here on this grill, man, getting it in. So I hear like birds and stuff in the background. No, yeah, but seriously, yeah. I mean, it makes you wonder, Paradox, what is actually being put forth. I mean, they have what, algorithms and different things that they use, because even if you're not even signed into YouTube, for instance, it's going to push certain things to you based on, you know, your viewing history, what you're searching. And so it's almost like, well, is what, you know, if you go and look through recommended for you, for instance, you know, how is that formulated? Is that just simply random? I mean, is it given in a certain way? Am I really choosing what I think I'm choosing? You know, so you know, information sharing, information gathering. There's a lot going on. So that's a good point that you raised.
Number one, I am fully aware of the ability of the people that run this planet currently, that have classified themselves as white. I do know that they study everything. So yes, I do feel like I'm walking around naked. I'm pretty sure that they are aware of this program. And everything that this program entails. I would imagine the arrogance of this system, of course, may not look at this particular program as a threat, but just like as anything else, the thoughts and the ability to deconstruct a system has to begin to recognize the system as such. So if you are a person that is into justice, I am not opposed to that. So there should be nothing that we say on this program that is in direct violation of that. And if you believe in freedom and justice and, you know, equality and whatever that means, then I'm pretty sure that, you know, our particular program should be right in line with that. Only thing that we may have a disagreement on is that we call the system that is currently ran now the most damaging system white supremacy, because in this form, that's what this is. It's a system that is based off mistreatment, based off race, and the way that you can run the globe in a more constructive manner. They have found the ability to do that properly. So that's my thoughts on feeling exposed, being on the internet. Highly aware, but we'll push forward nonetheless.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting just because I was listening to WTOP, which is a local regional news station.
You talking about Power?
WTOP, the news station, the 24-hour news.
Oh, okay.
You don't listen to WTOP?
No, I got you.
Anyway,
go ahead.
Anyway, they're having some issues with guys riding on motorcycles and dirt bikes. Not motorcycles, but you know, little dirt bikes. And I guess I call them four wheelers, things of that nature.
Yeah, that's been going on for years.
So So now in D.C. and Prince George's County, they seem to be concerned about it. So the chiefs of police came out, you know, as a joint group to talk about it. And I bring it up just because the first thing they was talking about was intel and just how, yeah, we've studied them and we noted, you know, there's a core group and then there's other guys who come in and out. And, you know, it was just the weird. It's something so basic and so simple, but just something on a very insignificant scale, there's a response to it. There is a dealing, so they have to deal, you know, to do with an event that now they didn't call them citizens. They said that they're disturbing our citizens, you know, and so and you know, they were concerned that, you know, it's hard to catch them because they can cut through cars and through neighborhoods and things of that nature. And it was a small thing. In so many ways, but in other ways, just by them being surveilled, them learning their behavior patterns, and then discussing their behavior patterns, I thought was, I thought was interesting. And that's on. And I know me and DC tend to talk about, scalability, right? So going from managing a very small event, you know, to managing 3/4 of the planet, the waterways, and just to be able to do all of that, it's just, you know, it's almost unreal. But clearly, you know, it's a real thing. But anyway, the title of the program is Independence Day. We're gonna discuss a few things. We may touch on. We're definitely gonna talk about whites and Jews, for sure. I'm thinking we definitely probably touch on we're gonna talk about possibly transfer of power from previous empires. Basically, historically speaking, to the best of my personal knowledge, you're looking at the Russian, the British, the French, the Hungarian, etc. It's a list of European empires that started exploring the globe, and then how that power sort of concentrated in what we now call the Western Hemisphere. Also, who's making decisions at the global level? We might touch on international law a little bit, or at least who set it up, going back to the development of the United Nations. As the European and American nations started to proclaim dominance at a level the universe has never seen before. And we might touch on Jay and his album seems to have the so-called black world, or the whole world, or the mainstream world, a little excited, some agitated. It's a thing. I don't know if we would consider it a big thing or a little thing.
Oh, that's big.
But it's a thing.
That's big. Don't sleep on the popular culture of Jay-Z, especially with this saying, "I'm not black, I'm OJ."
Okay, black folks. Also, we would touch a little bit on, will China or Russia say, protect, or assist black people, African American people of color, etc. What does that look like? And I also put a statement in here, which was how protesting, how they, at least from what the TV tells me, you know, how they can agitate an environment, you know, possibly even create some sort of governmental change. Now the protesters may not know that's what they're doing or being used to do, but they may be used to topple a government. I think Egypt could be an example of that, even how the CIA and others have been trying to bring down Iran by using the civilians there, whatever. But anyway, versus only a few on the planet who conquer. So people who can conquer groups and control and manage and maintain, exploit for resources, etc., sexual exploits, material gains, and also redeveloping their society to benefit the overall society. Those are some of the things that we might touch on. Just depends on where the conversation goes. Dr. Welzing opened up the program as always. Just a wonderful job, obviously. It's nothing too much to say there. Did y'all have any comments on what she had said? If y'all haven't forgotten already, do y'all have any comments on that? And then I'll ask my first question.
So just like anything else, she always give clarity, clear and concise descriptions about what the motivation for this system is. And I think that the sooner that we come to grips with understanding what the motivations are for this system, then we can really begin to deconstruct this particular system. And I don't think that she meant that they was up for any reform, especially when someone is trying to protect their genetic survival. Genetic survival, which means that these people want to exist. And you being here on the planet in their proximity is an issue. So hence the reason why there is a formation of a system dedicated, not by accident, definitely not by ignorance. These are not people that are doing things because they don't know any better, or that they don't stay around you, or that they don't share the same values. No, this is a dedicated system. Hence the reason why nationality is so important to this group that has classified themselves as white. Proceed.
You know what's funny? I had a white person tell me that they weren't racist, or some of them aren't racist, and I laughed. I said, yeah, because you haven't been activated yet. You don't even know. You don't even know when you're going to be called. They have to put some work in. And then I was thinking about how they call white people and non-whites who are under the Western umbrella, how they how I was thinking about some of the wars in the past, and even now, but I guess when they was drafting, or even before then, even going back to the Civil War, which I am not an expert on, of course, but I know that you had to get all types of people who weren't necessarily trained, but they could have been teachers, they could have been, I guess, lawyers, they could have been whoever or whatever, but to protect this system, those things had to be put to the side, if I'm not mistaken, right? I know they glorify the white women. What do they call that white woman? Mrs. Ribbit or something? I don't know. But anyway, I know that when I think about World War II, probably more than anything, and how white women went to the factories, obviously non-whites as well, but how the image that they portray is that white women go into the factories excitedly to pull all the materials around the country together. And I know these are stories. I don't know. I wasn't there. You know, they put all the materials together. They needed all these materials, and they started to build bombs. And just how wonderful it was, how great it was, how beautiful it was. Would y'all have any did you have anything on Dr. Welzing or what I just said before I get to the first question?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay. She mentioned tattooing and tanning. I thought that was interesting, and I think I shared with you all couple weeks ago, just wanted to bring this to light, the so-called glamour model in Europe, she's supposed to have the biggest boobs in Europe, is what they said, and now she's gotten extreme tanning injections to give her a crispy brown look. Not my words, their words. Her name, she goes by Martina Big, German. Because she's a German descent, and she claims that she wants the skin of an African girl. But yeah, that, you know, to the listeners, if you all want to check that out, Martina
did. Did you send me that? Did you already send us that? Man, I gotta look at that.
Yeah, check that one out. And she has her boyfriend too. Apparently, he also does the melanin injections. She's if you pull it up, you'll see picture. I think she has like 32 S size breasts. And she's got these melon injections to the point that she is chocolate brown. Very interesting.
Yeah, and I definitely want to be clear that Dr. Welsing is the expert. I am not the expert on this stuff. It is a theory that she has, a scientific study. Go read her books, and you'll get clarity on why she establishes her position from a genetic perspective, which can go over people's heads, goes over people's head all the time, goes over my head all the time. And so it's just something you have to really have the background. And if you can find some of her videos or her recordings, or even if you come to D.C., is it the first Thursday of the month during the winter and spring and fall?
Doing the semesters, fall and spring semesters.
Yeah, you can probably reach out to what's his name? I'm about to call him David. What's her guy's name?
Man,
wow, just slipping my mind right now.
That's embarrassing. No, we'll get out. We'll get his name and we'll give him his Danny Queen.
Yeah, Mr. Danny Queen. I was close. I had it with the letter D. Yeah. But Danny, so if you come to the city, we just got to. You know what? We probably just should find out. Can people just email him to get some of her CDs,
her recordings,
some of the recordings that he has. Yeah. Just so to help people kind of get a full understanding of her position and where it's coming from and why, because it's heavy, you know. It's scientific. It's a study. It's her theory. So it's coming from her, from her observations, from what she's done for the last 40 years, her grandfather and father, and all her experiences being in Germany, etc. Back in the 50s or 60s or whatever. And so it's just not some. Well, I'll put this in my position. It's just not some wonky, random type thing that's out there for her to make money or get attention or be somebody or be something in the so-called community. But anyway, so they had the part four? The convention. I'm going to call it a convention. I keep wanting to call it a convention. Down in D.C., I think it was last week that I went to, which was pretty interesting. I know we didn't have a chance to. We may discuss it probably on the next show, as far as the event itself. I know that we had kind of talked about it outside of the program, as far as Dick Gregory was there. It was an event that they had. I think it's the fourth annual event. I don't know why the name of it is slipping my mind right now. Power conference. It's slipping my mind right now. But all of the big conscious speakers and philosophers, et cetera, were all in present. From Professor Smalls to just a whole host. I think I sent y'all a list of people who were there.
Yeah, Dr. Umar.
Dr. Umar closed it up. They had what's the artist's name?
Professor Rock Newman. Rock Professor Newman. Griff.
And yep. What's the new young boy that's trying to be conscious more? What's his name that's been going all around? Down South rapper.
Where is he David, from?
David Banner, Mississippi. Oh,
David Banner. I didn't know David Banner was there. Okay.
And matter of fact, Roland Martin actually did a segment with Dick Gregory. Y'all can find it on YouTube, talking about the event as well. So, and all that. It was a large list of people there. Had some really, really good materials to pick up as well.
Did you find it constructive?
Did I find it constructive? You know, when I ask the question of a question, it's like, it's not going to be a good answer. He said that I find it constructive. I mean, I don't. Well, this is the thing. I'm not a. I didn't grow up in this environment, so it is like a thing. So for me, it was. It's not brand new. Obviously, I've been doing it for a while, but it's a lot to. I'll put it this way. I have no comment in the sense that it's so much to process. It's so much. It was so overwhelming because you had. You clearly have people who love what we call black people, who love African people, people who love black African culture and African history from all over the continent of Africa and really all over the world. And the things that because of colonization and y'all keep me honest here, because of colonization and whitewashing of material, which created a mass amount of confusion, mostly for non-whites, specifically for people who are now classified as black, such a masterful job the colonials have done and still doing, really, but just the misinformation, destroying entire civilizations and really giving people, you know, really giving people a new program or a new code to live their life by. And then having to piece together, like I was telling you, the brother I was talking to from Nigeria, you know, he was talking about how his grandfather would have their altars out in the village, where altars are everywhere. I guess every house or whatever you would call it had an altar. And, you know, you would do your rituals. And just how when... the Europeans didn't come back, I guess, to trade and take Africans, but they came to now take the land as well, and take over and set it all and set up their continue to extract resources from that place, other materials besides human flesh. They he said they had to move the. This is his grandfather. Now, if I'm not mistaken, y'all keep me honest. Africa, the 55, 56 nations in Africa became, once they were set up, I guess Britain, France, the Dutch, and others ran their course for about, what, 50, 70 years, something like that, or 50, 60 years. And then I think they mostly all was got their, what they're calling independence in the 60s and 70s. I could be wrong about that. So they also had civil wars, etc. So anyway, not to get too deep into that stuff, but that his father had to bring the altar in the house, and his grandfather had to bring the altar in the house in his lifetime, and his grandfather's still living. His father is a devout Christian, and obviously they're now in America. So anyway, I just thought that was interesting. To say the least.
So do you think it was constructive?
Let me go back to the beginning of the question.
Oh, was that the question?
That was the question, so, sir.
So for me on a personal level, I thought it was very interesting. And I'm definitely going back, obviously. It definitely feels good being now. I'm sure there was plenty of FBI agents in there. And spies and the whole lot. Probably half the crowd was feds, and even some of the speakers, I'm sure, as well. What do I know? But I know I'm in a system of racism. I know I'm in a system ran by Europeans, white folks, you know, people who have done things on the planet that they will answer for. And but because of that, knowing what they are and how they can flip people, how they can, you know, it's funny, right? And I'm gonna try to answer the question. It's funny that non-white folks is out here talking, speaking, discussing, and we should be so. And this is my own opinion. We should be so paranoid of each other, in a sense, because white folks have been able to infiltrate the entire globe. They have been able to connect with non-white people, right? All different European nations, all different clans and tribes of Europe were able to leave where they were from and go around the entire globe and make what they call first contact in Starship Enterprise. Is that what they call it? They You know, so they make first contact, and the ability to be able to manipulate these people, right? And then we fast forward until now, and everybody act like that don't exist. They act like things are all good. It is the strangest, most egotistical, ignorant, backwards thing I've ever seen in my life. It would be wonderful if we were living in what I'm now calling 2525. We were living in 2525. We on some wireless connectivity thing, having some discussions, right, with our minds, because, you know, we've advanced in technology now. since we've jumped into the future, we having a conversation about the past. But we're living under, in my very humble opinion, we're living under colonial rule still. We're still living in the British colony. They made deals with the French and the Spanish to take this land. This is really the British colony, if I'm not mistaken. I know this is Independence Day, so I have my first question to ask. But to be a part of independence, to think about the British, that the people who were here decided to flip on the kings and queens of England, and like, this is an actual colony. It's just for me such a hard thing to grasp and to wrap my mind around.
Paradox.
And for not,
paradox. I wanted to chime in on what you just said about paranoia, and the reason I said that is on social media, a person I don't know. You know, people send you friend requests, and you accept these requests, and they follow you, and you have conversations, but you don't really know these people, right? And so this person just kept interrogating me, asking questions, trying to get me to say something and about, you know, solutions, when I said that we're not going to buy our way out of this. You know, they were talking about black businesses and stuff, and I was like, that's all well and fine, and that's good. We need to do something to survive behind enemy lines, but don't mistake that as that's going to lead to our liberation, because it's not. How's the system that's enslaving you going to give you the means to liberate yourself? And so, you know, with capitalism. So anyway, he kept asking me questions about, well, what's my solution? I said, well, I can't really speak to you honestly on the government platform known as Facebook, aka Facebook. So this person said, I'm paranoid. Now, what triggered that memory is when you said paranoia. And so I explained to this person, I said, is it paranoia if it's real? Now, I haven't really said, you know, talked about this a lot, but especially when I first created Black Talk Radio Network platform, my software that, you know, blocks people from trying to hack it and stuff, it actually would trace to the source of the attack. And so one of the attempted hacks on my computer was traced to a building in Falls Church, Virginia. Well, we all know what kind of government buildings is out there in Falls Church, Virginia. So I looked up the word paranoia, a mental condition characterized by delusions of persecution, unwarranted jealousy, or exaggerated self-importance, typically elaborated into an organized system. Now, you just gave the history. You didn't mention COINTELPRO, but you mentioned how the system infiltrates movements, sends their agents, and that, you know, we should be concerned about those things. So I'm just saying to you, Paradox, is it really paranoia if it's based on documented facts and history?
Well, the answer to that is no, it is not paranoia. That is for sure. And we are very close to Falls Church and a whole bunch of other places up here that I'm not going to sit here and list. And, you know, we are around these people. So, I mean, I won't lie. It is a hard thing to process. If people who live in this area, knowing non-whites, I mean, Indians, Latinas, Latinos, people from all over the Asian Peninsula, Southeast Asia, etc. You would be because not. He done got me off topic now. Just because it's so much money that is made in this place, you know, you go to places like Reston, Virginia, or Tysons 2 in Tysons, Virginia, and you know everybody here either works for the government or are contracted with the government, and not necessarily doing anything nefarious per se. They could be cleaning people, but that's not the point. Just that what is required and the I don't know what the word is, but just being just nonchalant, just living your life, going to clubs, drinking well, eating well, and that's that, you know, putting your money away, you know, having trips, just enjoying life, and not but okay with the empire, because it does treat you well, and not only does it treat you well, not everybody clearly, but specifically in this area, for a certain class of people and a certain group of people, just that it the way they can separate the killing and the bloodletting and the sheer amount of blood that is required to maintain this environment, to be able to shield your labor force from that, you know, and give them give them a house, car, running water, stores to go to, and to then also set things up to where it also creates separation to make you feel better than others in your environment. And I mean, being able to study and understand, and it's not that complicated, human behavior and how the way we respond to certain stimuli is fascinating. But anyway, I'm getting kind of sidetracked. So DC asked me, was it constructive? It was okay, DC. So the title of the program is Independence Day, and the question I have for you two is what does that mean? What does that mean to either of you? We talk about Independence Day, we're talking about 1776, we're talking about the European timeline, as far as how they see the world and how we are living in their world. If you want to look at that, if you want to look at it that way, I know some may look at it as our world, as well. We put the work in. So we're gonna roll with the conquerors. So what are y'all thoughts on that?
Go ahead, T.
Well, you know, you mentioned managing an empire. What a lot of people don't know, but when you go back and look at the historical document, is that the so-called United States of America never actually gained its independence from the British Empire. It actually was a transfer of power to a small few, which they then called the Founding Fathers, who were actually traitors to the Articles of the Federation of Perpetual Union, which was the Constitution number 3. You got to think, the British Empire was fighting wars ostensibly all over the planet, inside in Africa. So just think of all the logistics, manpower, artillery, ships, and this is in the 18th century. So we don't have the, you know, the air power, and you know, you're spending months at sea if you're coming to the colonies or to North America. You're spending months at sea making the journey. So just think of all the manpower, and if you have an unruly people in North America, a lot of those people, in fact, were what they would call degenerates. They were criminals that they wanted out of England, so they kicked them out and placed them here. They had penal, North and South Carolina were penal colonies. That was the original intent, penal colonies. So they picked out what they considered their underclass, and they were given the monarchy a lot of problems here in North America. You know, they didn't want to pay taxes. I mean, there's various reasons for that. But when you consider that you're trying to manage an empire and you're sending out resources to North America, North Africa, perhaps even South Africa, and other places around the globe, you're trying to find the Silk Road to India, things of that nature, would it at some point behoove you to consider a transfer of power and create a scenario where people feel that they have certain freedoms? So
so that they can now kind of back off and calm down, so to speak. It was interesting when I thought about the fact we talk about wars. At what point would, you know, since it's so-called white people who create the language, at what point is it considered a war? Is, you know, you have wars, you have uprisings, civil wars, but there obviously are skirmishes and things, that battles that take place prior to them classifying it as a war. So what are the prerequisites to even classify it as a war? And I say that because if you have like the Boer Wars in Africa, I believe in the 1800s, what took place prior to that to lead up to you now calling it a war? We really don't know. So my point is that when you're managing an empire, there are certain moves that you make, certain adjustments that you make to the system to allow it to survive and give people a certain amount of quote-unquote freedom, which is an illusory term because it means different things to different people, but you give them that idea and you set them, you know, you set them to go about their way in order for you to allow you to have some space to operate as the elite, so-called elite. And then not only that, but you create scenarios where there are scapegoats for all the problems and ills of society, in this case, so-called black people. Those are my thoughts.
DC, do you have anything as far as Independence Day?
Yeah, like I said at the top of the program, I think that when you think about Independence Day, it's just like anything else. You got to really, really start to begin to think about motivations and why people do the things that they do, and the reason why propaganda and psychological control of people's ideas are so important. The reason why they would get you into the whole thing about popping fireworks and joining the whole deal about, you know, this is our country, this is our flag, because we were entrapped here on this landmass and we bled here, we fought here. When I say we, I'm talking about those forced into the classification of black. And I know that people still have a lot of issues with what black is, who is black, who's not black. I'm not here to argue that point. White people do the classifying, and they have classified us in different ways, but clearly it's a distinction between those that are white and those that are non-white. And then there is a real clear distinction between those that are non-white that have now been classified as black people. So when we say Independence Day, I would just suggest you to look up the history, study it, understand that, as was already suggested, you know, a little bit before I even started to speak, there was a Declaration of Independence. A Declaration of Independence has to be recognized, and that was the advent of the conflict, which is the American Revolutionary War. And, you know, being that the British receded that conflict, the people of the Americas, the people that classified themselves or began to start to classify themselves as white and not as an actual nation outside of being an American, they basically said that we are now an independent faction of our own country, our own destiny, and we would no longer be held under the tax bracket of British rule. We no longer be held to that, or you can come back over here and receive another butt whipping, you know, however you want to take that. But I am a studier of political systems, capitalist systems. I believe that all of it leads to white supremacy upholding itself, however you want to describe it, socialism, communism, mercantile system before the advent of the modern era, the Iron Age, however you want to describe it. And it's all based off a system of mistreatment, and the most organized form of a system of mistreatment that the world has ever known, because of the languages that the masses of the people of this planet speak, which is now English, is the system of racism, white supremacy, that a planet, not a planet, but that a country so small in scope as British or Britain, that is so small in landmass, would have the ability to have its reach, its grasp on vast lands, and have people speaking these languages just to survive. So I think about Independence Day in the right context. I know it's basically a Independence Day for Europeans against Europeans, but it's also a bondage day for those of us that are not classified as white. And I think that with the advent of Independence Day, hope I'm not going too long, hope I'm connecting the dots here. The advent of Independence Day basically gave way to imperialism, basically, to the point where the Americas could stretch out from just the 13 colonies, because at that point, you know, you didn't have all these other states, what is now forgotten about, but the rest of this particular territory belonged to Spain. I think a little bit of belonged to France, and a very small piece of it, maybe Portugal. But even then, it was still the natives of this landmass, which some of those natives would look like what we would now describe as black people, and some of the natives would look like what has been commonly known as the Native American, with brownish, high-colored, brownish skin tone, with straight black hair. Those land masses will be taken over, and they will call it Manifest Destiny. So if you study Independence Day, please study and understand that it was only 13 colonies, which is the East Coast, which is the reason why this is considered the Old South, not the New South. And this is before Mississippi, this is before Louisiana, this is before Alabama, this is before Texas. Those were not even states anymore now. So I want people to really understand what Independence Day is. It's the beginning of the end for the Native American on this particular landmass. It gave them the opportunity to expand, which you had the Spanish-American War, you had the Cherokee Indian Wars and stuff like that. Please, I would advise anybody that listened to our program to please do a little bit more studying on how states became states. And, you know, this history is not hidden from anybody. And then you would get a better idea of how the system of racism and white supremacy has basically grew in its scope and taken over the planet. Hope I wasn't too long-winded.
Nah, man, take your time.
Does that make any sense?
Do you have a kind of a counter to some of that history that he mentioned and some of the language that he was using just now, or no?
In terms of, I don't think so. But what do you mean?
Well, I know you just the position I know you take. I just want to make sure that we're keeping DC on the right track. That's all. So you may have something that you may want to clean up a little bit of something that he just said. I don't know. So I was checking.
He's accurate in the statement.
Okay.
I don't have any disagreement.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Well,
go ahead. You were hoping for one. Pop, say that again.
I said you were hoping for one. I'm kidding.
Yeah, I was actually. Yeah.
Well, if anybody out there saying that, I mean, you know, it wasn't 13, it was really 15 or 17, please provide the evidence. I like to see it, that's fine too, let me know.
T goes and gets more information. So I know that some of the language that gets used, I just want to make sure that we're not missing anything when we're talking about the 13 colonies, where it's like America, you know, these different wars that took place, why they took place, etc. So
no, I mean, I just want to make it clear that, and it's
who financed the wars.
So we ain't got to that part. That's the other conversation with the our Jews white people, which that's a tough one. But go ahead, T. We'll get into that.
Leave it all together.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have to spend too long on this, but I just wanted to. There's a lot of information that I could give on it, and it would probably take the breadth of this show, but just to remind or let people know that the July 4th, 1776 was not the creation of, it was the creation of a new nation, but still under the authority and the directorate of Great Britain. And I'll just keep it brief. One thing that's proof positive of that is the War of 1812. How many years later is that, after 1776, that British troops were back again fighting with the new United States of America? And then you have the Treaty of Paris, where the king literally, if you read that, King George III, if you read that treaty, he's dictating to the Americans what they call themselves, the what rivers and streams they have fishing rights in, the boundaries of Nova Scotia and Newfoundland, different areas bordering the newly founded United States of America.
Okay, T, we're gonna hold that comment. We're gonna go to break. This is the Code Breakers on Black Talk Radio Network.
In 2008, the Black Talk Media Project launched the digital radio platform, Black Talk Radio Network, the first such platform created to serve the black community specifically. Black Talk Radio Network has grown with a variety of radio hosts, digital radio stations, and podcasters. Web analytics say Black Talk Radio, the platform, has an online reach that ranks it among the top independent black media platforms in the world. All of this is possible because of financial contributions to the nonprofit Black Talk Media Project. If you love the work we do and the voices and perspectives we bring to you every day, make a donation today to ensure that Black Talk Radio is here in the future. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
All right, we are back. T, go ahead and finish.
Yeah, and then so we just talk about how the really found the United States is actually under the directorate of the Your Highness and His Majesty. And then also point out that George Washington wrote a letter to the Sultan of Morocco, Sidi Muhammad, on December 1st, 1789. And you can, I'm not going to read that, but go out there and research, and you'll see that they reached out to Mohammedan, what they call it then, which Muslims, they call them Mohammedans, followers of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. And they reached out to him and letting him, just read it, and you'll see how they were pretty much asking for them to recognize them as a new nation. And that gets into international law, which I think we were supposed to touch on at some point in the show, how you know, creating a new nation, so to speak, involves being recognized by another existing nation. And I just find it interesting that all the vitriol against Muslims. Anyway, I'll leave it there.
Now, if you want to go into international law, just your thoughts on it, that'd be great. I dropped it on that list just to see if anybody wanted to just even indulge in it at all, really.
Yeah, what were your thoughts around that? I mean, as far as putting it down,
it just that it's a lot of it's confusing. You know, we have our own. Somebody set up the laws here that you have to follow as far as a civilian. I guess I use that word. And then you also have some groups came together. I would assume it's the highest level, and structured. I called it modern, I think, because I'm assuming that there've always been some agreements around the planet on how to operate. It may have been more regional, possibly. I'm not sure how fast information traveled and how often people interacted over what kind of time frame, but possibly some agreements that I don't really have documents on. But as far as more modern law, we'll say after the turn of the last century, just groups coming together, starting to have, like, I think this week they're having a G20 meeting. I think it's this week, right? So the top, I guess, top 20 nations come together to chit-chat over tea and crumpets on how they're going to continue to maintain the planet or whatever. And so just think, and that's probably one thing that's probably triggered that thought, is just how, you know, how these mighty nations, come together every few months, you know, a few times a year. And, you know, you look at who's, you know, you look at people on the list, you know, I'm not sure how you become one of the 20 or one of the 8 or the permanent 5 or whatever they call them. So I don't know how you get on these different lists. DC may can speak to that a little bit, but it's just interesting. Then I'm assuming that they are the ones who established a lot of these. Well, I guess you had some maritime laws and things of that nature already, I'm guessing, in place historically, but I'm guessing that they've pumped those laws and rules up from the past so they can do commerce around the globe. I guess they discuss military strategy, resource strategy, which, you know, where are we taking the world, all the different conflicts, and then how we're going to handle those, and then how do we structure laws around how we're going to operate, how we're going to treat, I guess, less powerful nations. So that just kind of was my thought around that question or statement.
Yeah, I think you said something very important, and that's that you said commerce. I think commerce is truly the only law, international law. That's just my opinion, because when you look at commerce, is intricately tied to military and finance, and we talked about that before. So apparently, based on what I've seen just out of Syria, for instance, there are obviously numerous examples for, you know, decades, centuries, but, you know, when you can apply a type of military force and violate international law in a what they call a sovereign country, has its own government, own structure, shoot missiles into the state, what have you, in the name of contracts, essentially. I think that's what the ultimate goal is to get contracts. You know, what you tear down a city, bomb the hell out of it, and what do you do next? You bring in people to build it up. And then maybe even you bring in some Western influence, like a McDonald's or Burger King or something that is... And then McDonald's adjusts the flavor of their burgers or their sodas to suit the... I think McDonald's has, what, over 300 flavors of... Or Coca-Cola, rather, has over 300 flavors of Coca-Cola. Uh-huh. So you bring in these corporations and they adjust to the local culture. And although it may appear as though they are embracing of the culture, they're exploiting it. They're doing what they need to do to sell their product. So I think commerce is the law of the world, actually. What do you guys think about that statement?
No, I agree. I mean, I don't really have anything to add to that. I mean, I think that's very well stated.
Go ahead.
Did you all want to get into the other part of the show. You mentioned it before break.
Sure. We can talk about it. I know that. Look, it's really a. I think they say this at church. It's a power packed show.
Don't be nervous. Sermon. Don't be nervous. Now, like I said at the beginning, we're all about justice, equality, and the non-American way.
Funny.
We're not here. We're not here to mistreat.
Definitely not trying to do that. Definitely trying to get some clarity on some things.
So speaking about clarity, I guess we can kind of get into it because this was something that was discussed and not agreed upon, that there seems to be a lot of confusion when people say Jew or Jewish people. I guess we could tie in Jay-Z into this also, because Jay-Z separates the people that he know of that are called Jews, which he said, you know why Jews are so, I guess, financially viable. And then he kind of gives his kind of breakdown on, you know, what he deems is, well, let me just say that he says some things about financial freedom. Is the only hope, forget living rich and dying broke. He said it in a more colorful way, but you know what I mean. And he kind of illustrated the Jew thing, and I wanted to kind of discuss that because I need clarity, because I have come to a state of confusion when it comes down to the group that call themselves Jews. Now, from what I'm understanding, there is a term called ethno-cultural, that they're an ethno-cultural group, which means that some of this will be ethnicity and some of this will be cultural / religion purposes, or that you can be a person of German or Polish or more classic European ancestry. But if you have a group that has identified with the culture of being in the Jewish religion or traditional culture, then that would actually make you Jewish. But then there are some traces where there are clear bloodlines. So I just said that, you know, I made a statement that I, as far as what I know, I'm not a white person. So let me get that out the way. I am not a white person, not close. However, from the little bit of knowledge that they do give me to study when it comes down to Jews, because pretty much Jewish people are in your everyday life, and you would think that most of these people will be white, not unless you are another white person that has clearly identified this person as something outside of that. So I have stated that Jews became officially white or joined the white group by the end of the advent of the World War II, and that was very important to make them a class of whiteness because of the fracture within Europe that had groups of people that did not look so-called Nordic white, that would be, I guess, considered more of a Middle Eastern white people, Assyrians, who else? Turkish bloodline, what they call them is Abkhazi. I know I'm pronouncing it incorrectly, but these groups of people would be what you would consider the bloodlines of the original Jewish people. Let me just say this. I do know that there are Jewish people that would fall under the classification of black, that also is traced by bloodline, whether they are of African American ancestry. We have some that are very popular over here. In other words, Lenny Kravitz, Lisa Bonet. I think both of their parents are what you would not consider white people. You would call them Jewish people or Jewish white people, however you want to term it. But their parents were Jewish. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Diana Ross, which is Tracy Ellis Ross' father, is a Jewish white man also. Hence the reason why those particular black people, and they are black, they fall into the classification by force, that is, you know, so be it. These people are entertainers, or they fall into the entertainment blogosphere. So did you guys have any statements on that about what I just said there about Jewish and Jews being white?
You can go ahead, T. I'll hear what. Did you have anything before I make my comment on that? I know you probably have more of a. I think we all agreed that the European Jews are just that, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Oh yeah, they classified as white. I mean, unless you all have, I haven't heard of that. Jewish person who is classified as white say that they're not. Do you all know of any instances of that?
Oh yeah, there are a lot of Jewish people that say that they're not white. They'll tell you if you approach them and you call them white, they tend to kind of have a funny feeling on the inside, like you said something to them that is making them squirm a little bit, which will go back to the beginning. The reason why they fall into the classification. But I don't know that there may be a place in the place of the U.S., United States, America, whatever you want to call it, where you could put Jewish on your driver's license. Is there a place where you could do that? It may be. I don't know.
Not to my knowledge. But they might have a special code, though.
There's a lot of Jewish people here in this area. You know, University of Maryland, a lot of Jewish people, in Baltimore especially up that way, you got a lot of Jewish folks out in Baltimore. A lot of them. So, I mean, you know, it is what it is, man. Especially like, you know, like the kosher at Giant. You know those signs where they had a little kosher section?
Well, it's not just the section. Actually, if you look at a lot of the product signs,
yes, sir.
I don't know. A lot of them, you can see the K, and there's a circle around the K, the kosher, mm-hmm. or U, I believe it is, different symbols on the food products, which are very small. But if you look, you'd be surprised where you find them. So a lot of stuff we consume is considered kosher. That's kind of off topic, but, you know, might be useful.
No, that's on topic. I think that is very... That's very important to kind of list that, because, you know, I think that, if I'm not mistaken, kosher foods fall under a Jewish dietary platform. So that's something that is, you know, formulated with their palate, their taste, you know, their food, basically. Like I said, it's one of those ethno-cultural groups that have been able to keep their culture and their history intact, along with the whole bridge of whiteness. So I would just put them in the situation of being biracial white people, because for whatever reason, most Jewish people, especially here in America, are mixed. They normally have German and Jewish ancestry. It's weird how that kind of goes together. Normally a white person here in America, especially born here, will normally have those roots. Whether the father would be German or, you know, more so the even British ancestry, it would be like a German ancestry with Jewish or Ashkenazi Jewish ancestry, normally would be the mix. which would make you a run-of-the-mill white person that practice racism, white supremacy on a global level. They just have a culture tied to it, so to say.
And I think our discussion was around when we're looking at warfare, and we can which war are we talking? We were talking about World War II, I think, and we was trying. I guess all the wars, especially in Europe, it's specifically in Germany, where who was financing the war, and what does financing a war looks like versus the people who are actually the generals or the president or the leader of that landmass is executing the war itself. Where does the power lie, and who's in control? And I believe one position is the Jews are in control, potentially, or the white Jews or Jewish Germans or whoever really was driving that war and many other wars as well. I believe is one of the positions. Versus is Hitler, who I think possibly even is part Jew, whatever that means. Hitler and his philosophy, as far as whiteness, getting that philosophy from America, but his philosophy of whiteness and purity, and his position to exterminate the poorest of the Jews, while you had wealthy Jewish bankers, and also trying to dominate and conquer the planet, and to even go into other European nations outside of England, to get those people in check as well, to obviously grow its power, and also I guess to promote white dominance. So I think that's kind of where we were, right?
Yeah, a little bit. That was a little bit of it. T, you want to go ahead and comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, you just have to question who financed the war and why. Anytime you have a war, you need financial backing to acquire military hardware, what have you. So that would be the question. And I think based on that answer, that might supply. Well, based on the answer to that question, that might supply some more insight into the topic. That's my position.
Yeah,
so
go ahead, D.
What I was going to say was, so this brings it back to the lariat, the top five, the God MC himself, J-Hove. Now you got to remember, this man is from New York City. If I'm not mistaken, New York City has a very large population of white people that classify themselves as Jews. So, you know, he has a very particular relationship with those groups of people, especially when you talk about record labels and their ability to deal with Black entertainers or Black artists. So what do you guys think about his advice on his album, if you wanted to kind of get into that a little bit?
Oh, I think it's straightforward, but go ahead, T.
Well, for instance, like the was it OJ, second track on his album,
Story of OJ,
he talks about instead of, well, I can't remember what the words were exactly, but something to the fact that
I'm not Black, I'm OJ.
Yeah, instead of fighting over blocks that your mother rents, buy the block and rent it back, something to that effect.
That's how you rent it.
That's how you rent. So
yeah, he was saying that you know, I told him, please don't die over the neighborhood that your mama renting. Take your drug money and buy the neighborhood. That's how you rent it. I bought every V12 engine. I guess he's talking about cars. Wish I could take it back to the beginning. I could have bought a place in Dumbo before it was Dumbo for like $2 million. That same building today is worth $25 million. Guess how I'm feeling? Dumbo. Jay-Z is You know, he answers his own question, because he goes into the hook after that, and this is weird. But I don't know if he was trying to be facetious here, or whether he was just making a point about not being able to do it. So that's weird. It has to be something that you would have to ask the author himself, because there's so many different ways you can interpret that that lyric. By the way, some people would flip it for their own means.
Though, do you think he knows who the Supreme Commander is?
Do I think Supreme that he Commander. Knows who the Supreme Commander is?
Right, for the United Nations, like the Supreme Commander of the United Nations. Do you think he knows who the Joint Chief of Staff is? Do you think he know any of those people?
No.
You think he has dinner with those people?
No, absolutely not.
You think he's at the summit this week, hanging out?
No. Well, that's what I'm saying. We having different conversations. Like,
who me and you, or him and other people?
I'm talking about people forced into the classification of black. I'm just talking about black people here. Yeah, I need to be very clear on that. This is not a white person's conversation. White people don't talk on this level. They talk about conquering nations and conquering, you know, planets. Our particular conversation is based off their system being in place. So without the system being in place, then your million don't mean anything, because, you know, it doesn't mean anything due to you being part of a weaker country or a weaker group. I mean, it's just like somebody being in Syria rapping about their money. I mean, when it's unstable there.
There is no more money there.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like somebody rapping about, you know, that, and just kind of like not having it connected to the European governments across the world. It just doesn't make any sense.
That's a perfect example. Jay-Z is an artist in Syria. So how much energy does he really get? Or does it prove... It doesn't really prove anything. I mean, we're civilians. You know, we're just, you know, we're labor. I mean, it's not really bigger than that. And you need things to entertain you. I don't really think it's any deeper. So he's talking about his experiences in life, but, you know, he doesn't have access to anything. I mean, maybe he does. What the hell do I know? You know, he might drive down to Langley, Virginia, and hang out at the Central Intelligence offices for all I know. I mean, I don't know. If not, you know, he's just a typical black person who happens to have some cash, and, you know, he's a great artist who can speak, you know, who can put together great, he can use the English language very well. I don't know if it's any deeper than that. I know people are trying to profit and benefit and eat off of him, because he's eating off of everybody else, and everybody else is eating off of him. And the industries of distraction, the entertainment industries, the industries that I enjoy, obviously, you know, I don't know if it's any more than that. It does expose powerlessness. It does give you an indication of, which is what it is a one drop in a big bucket of water, in a sense of just things are still, everything is still on track. You know, everybody's still, you know, for the most part, you know, going to work, you know, listening to music, going to clubs, going to church, and just living their life. That's all I'm saying. I don't think it's any more than that, outside of Jay-Z being a more private person, and he's speaking more about his life, and then we can kind of tie in the title, his business, and his business needing an infusion probably of capital. So he exposes a little bit more of himself. He's a super mega star. Beyonce is on another level. So him, you know, apologizing, him you know, talking about, you know, economics, etc. He's hitting all the points. You know, typically artists, poets, those are the people who typically observe on a small scale an environment, can speak to it, keep his ear to the ground, know what's important, know what's popular, and then exploit that position, right? So he knows that he knows that, and we're in a time where people are a little bit more conscious. They're ignorant, obviously, including myself, but we are a little bit more aware. Things are a little bit hotter because of having the first African president and having the first and having a kind of a throwback white person in power who isn't as proper as well. Shit, I don't even know any of them that were proper, so for that matter, but doesn't necessarily follow certain protocols, I'll put it that way. And so with that said, I think it's a very, 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 very small thing, but I have enjoyed it. I do appreciate him putting it out. I appreciate him talking about him and his girl and just the whole entertainment value of it. Because I'm gonna that's just me. I'm not gonna sit here. We can't sit here. I'm not gonna sit here and fake it. I'm playing it. I'm enjoying all 10 tracks. I'm entertained by it. It's interesting. But at the same time, I have to know how to pocket it. I have to keep it, in my opinion, I have to keep it in his lane. I will say this, which I would have thought would have been way more interesting. If he would have touched on war and mass killing, that would have been interesting. I know he did touch on a lot of stuff, with some of the things that are going on, within our environment directly. But I thought that would have been a little bit more interesting to see. And the reason why I'm saying that is that you got me, you've been having me think about Martin Luther King a lot lately with some of his ending speeches and him really targeting Vietnam and exposing whiteness and, you know, trying to match that with Jay having an opportunity. Because I was telling you, Auntie, I said, you can't tell me that black folks can't organize if it was a reason to organize. So then what that's telling me is that people who are calling, people who are thinking that they're trying to organize or they are organizers, that they're really not, that it could potentially be some sort of fraud or hustle, meaning that blacks are something different than what some people want them to be. But anyway, I'll stop right there. Go ahead, fellas.
Well, one thing I can say is that if I'm running a society, and I think this is something I think is historical, the most controlled individuals, or some of the most controlled individuals, or that you keep an eye on within a society, will be your artists, because they typically don't think within the usual bounds of reason that have been created by the powers that are. If you look at, like, the, I don't know, kind of having a brain fart here, but because they have the influence that they have, people follow them, people listen to them. It can change the mental landscape of a nation if you're not careful is what I'm saying. So I think this is my opinion. I think JP is maybe skirting the bounds of those limitations that have been imposed.
So
obviously, it's apparent to me that he, as well as his wife, are into consciousness, at least to some degree. I hate to use that word because it's not really, I don't think it's definitive, but
you gotta look out for the consciousness killer now.
I'm here for peace, man.
Yeah, so I think based on the artistry from Jay as well as Beyonce, you can see, and I don't know if it's how much input they actually have, and let's just say like music videos, but even their artwork and their albums, for instance. But a lot of it is leans toward, you know, consciousness, I guess you would say, or knowing thyself to a degree.
They're
still limited, though. Still limited.
Can you scale it for me? Since you are the cynic, can you scale it for me? If the reason why I'm asking this question specifically because you know, I'm not necessarily around powerful people, so I can easily convince myself that this really means something, and people will convince me of it. But if you had to scale it on a global level, where would you rank it as far as level of importance? Because to be able to have one human being like a Michael Jackson control or assist Western philosophy, infuse it, like you was, I think you had mentioned, I don't want to rant too much, but I think you had mentioned, what did you had talk about? You talking about McDonald's and different flavors. Even Walmart was failing in China until they put in turtles. They had to put turtles and a bunch of other foods into the Walmart for them to actually start to profit and be successful back when they started setting them up in China. But anyway, well, how do you know, I know, because you make a point that Jay would be considered a commodity, obviously, and that he, you know, and that he would be exported, or even this album or B's albums, and obviously they spend a lot of time in Europe and in Asia, obviously, in other places, but to be able to use them as some sort of commodity or a tool to continue to push Western thought patterns. And so if you scaled him on 1 to 10 and said, well, we'll look at one as a guy, say, working at McDonald's, talking what he's talking, and then a 10 hanging out at an embassy or something where you're actually involved in international affairs. Just scaling it, saying, well, an artist is very high on the level because they have the ability to access 100, 200, 300 million people, and, you know, and they're in. And black people, Americans, what we do, our job or a few of us's job is to continue to push American exceptionalism, American capitalism, etc. Can you kind of talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you're talking about a commodity is what sets the market, right? So if you're talking about like oil, I mean, that's pretty much the whole stock market. Oil plummets, the stock market. I'm talking about, you know, S&P, the Dow, the NYSE, whatever you want to talk about. You can even talk about, you know, the Hang Seng and Hong Kong. So globally, it can send prices down. So anytime you have a commodity, artists are commodities, especially when you have someone on a level of influence like Michael Jackson. I mean, if you looked at the level of inspiration that he gave to people and the amount of passion that he invoked from people. You know, you look at some of his concerts and people being carried out on stretchers, crying, you know. Very powerful, the music, his lyrics. He had a song, They Don't Really Care About Us. Very key, I think, very inspirational. So, of course, I think you, on the level of 1 to 10, I think, probably about 8 or 9, because I mean, wasn't Jay-Z with Obama, the Obamas, wasn't he, you know, rolling around with dignitaries? Even look at even sports figures to me, I would consider to be artists or have a form of artistry in what they do on the field or the fields. Mm-hmm. Because look at you know, he's not in it anymore. Dennis Rodman meeting with foreign dignitaries. How is that possible? I'm sure he didn't do. Can't just go to North Korea of his own volition and talk to Kim Jong Un without there being some type of permission granted to him. So, yeah, artists are very a commodity, and so you trade them as such. You put them on a certain level to where they have a certain level of access, but you kind of keep them on the reins because they have so much, they have a lot of influence on people, tremendous influence.
Yeah, I think that Jay-Z's influence on popular culture would, especially with this album, to me, I think that it's very important. I don't want to oversell his importance in the overall scope of things as far as the system of racism, white supremacy, but it's clear that there is a distinction between trying to eliminate this system and trying to elevate in the same system, which means that if you're elevating in this system and you think that that is the way to go, then you understand the conflict that you're going to have with the same system that is basically built on mistreating other people. Hence the lyrics of Kill Jay-Z. He kind of goes into detail. Anybody, you know, I'm not going to go over any of the lyrics, but if you listen to the lyrics, or if you even look at the lyrics written down, it kind of goes into the duplicitous nature of how the system plays it and it tears people apart. Jay-Z, I think, is very consciously aware. I think me and Paradox and T, we talked about it. I think he is very aware of who Dr. Welsing is. I think he's aware of who Mr. Neely Fuller is. I don't know how much he gives credence to their theories or their doctrine, but I am pretty sure that he's aware of who these people are and these great ancestors of ours that have basically tried their best to open the eyes of people that are classified or forced into the classification of black and what is needed for us to get clarity on how to solve this problem. And I think that Mr. Reed had reiterated it earlier, that someone was basically stating business. But it's just like anything else that I tell anybody else that want to practice that kind of mode of advancement. Who are you going to mistreat? And not only who are you going to mistreat, if you're basically trying to demand yourself or fall into the whole economic system, the economic system is based off protection, it's based off American militarism. Everything connects. All the systems and the areas of activity, like Mr. Fuller has stated very succinctly, are connected or interconnected. So you can't have one without the other. You can't have politics without economics. You can't have economics without education. You can't have education without law, labor, sex, and war. Like, all these activities are intertwined. Hence the reason why they have been able to psychologically fool us into thinking that we can basically overturn or reform a system based off oppression. So hence, that's where people get to that certain level, where they get to a certain glass ceiling. You would hear somebody say something like, still nigga, light nigga, fake nigga, real nigga, house nigga, field nigga, still nigga. You're still forced in. I don't care who you think you are, OJ. I don't care who you think you are, Bill Cosby. I don't care who you think you are, President Obama. I don't care who you think you are. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. This whole system is based off racism, white supremacy. Either that's true or it's not true. Period. That's it. The system, and if the system, as Dr. Welsing has basically reiterated, if the motivation for this system at its core is based off genetic survival, then the group that has classified themselves as another group, hyper whites, or whatever you want to call it, white supremacists, if they have declared themselves as white and that is something to be important, is something to be elevated, right? Then it's important to note that they will do anything. They will stack the deck.
Well, that's a great segue into what I want to do next. If Mr. Reed is listening, Mr. Reed, could we do a quick break, and I want you to play that. Play about 4 minutes of that video, if you don't mind. I've never only got about 15 minutes left here.
I'm sorry, did you send another video?
Yeah, I emailed you.
Okay, I'll pull it up. All right, we'll go into break and come back with that first 4 minutes of the video?
Yes, sir.
Okay, no problem. Yeah.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
Since January 2015, the Naval Surface Force has been at the forefront of distributed lethality, developing and implementing an all-force concept to prepare the world's greatest Navy to win the fight in a multi-domain environment. Whether it's cyber, undersea, air, space, or the electromagnetic spectrum the adversary threatens, the innovation and creativity from an increasingly capable and lethal fleet across all domains will result in the control of any contested expanse. The flexibility and mobility of the DL concept, seen in both tactics and operations, will increase the effectiveness of assets while overwhelming an adversary's resources to the point where decisive actions devolve into reactive defense. To ensure victory, one must take the offensive and focus on the basic operational principles: deceive, target, destroy. For a quarter of a century, our adversaries have developed weapons that keep our force at range. Distributed lethality undermines and eradicates this advantage by forcing the expenditure of resources so that our globally distributed fleet can create gaps and inject targeting uncertainty to ultimately break the adversary's kill chain. Expect the fight. Predict the outcome. The return to sea control calls on every operator and tactician to tap into our most basic instincts as warfighters. From here on out, every shipboard evolution is an opportunity to practice and master the basic principles of distributed lethality. Through the emphasis of tactics, talent, tools, and training, which enables any ship or force package to become a critical hub in a network maritime environment, operational commanders and national leadership now have options up and down the ladder of escalation. From homeland littorals to contested conflict areas across the sea, surface ships provide persistent presence, credible capability, and tactical superiority in peace and war. The creation of the first PAC-SAG in 2016, comprised of three DDGs, actualized the organizing concept of DL and has laid the groundwork for the deployment of an even more robust adaptive force package in the year 2018 that will include an upgunned ESG and the first operational deployment of the Joint Strike Fighter. Through the partnership of military and industry, innovation and material investments will increase our surface combatant staying time in a battle and enhance combat power. Sea control will be assured through the continued modification and integration of existing capabilities and will ultimately lay the framework for the development of follow-on sensors, platforms, and weapons. And with joint force capabilities in undersea, surface, land, air, cyber, and electronic warfare, the playing field just got bigger. Regardless of the circumstance, increased lethality distributed throughout the globe will give the warfighter the tactical advantage needed to make themselves harder to find and harder to kill. To deceive, target, and destroy without fail must become the warfighting ethos ingrained at the very heart of our culture so that it may be adopted, executed, and improved upon by every crew member entrusted with a warship and empowered to take that warship into battle.
All right, this is the Code Breakers. That was our last break. We got a few minutes left to finish up, and that was what I would consider, I guess you would consider it a propaganda video. I don't know. But I think the do they always say the USS when they say a warship or aircraft carrier? But I do know, I was telling you fellas about their commissioning the Gerald Ford, which is the largest, most expensive, most sophisticated, supposedly, aircraft carrier on the planet. And they think it's going to be commissioned by Mr. Donald J. Trump, I think, next week. I think something like that. But anyway, what did y'all think of the language? Just wanted to get y'all a quick take on that. Just wanted to play that real quick, just to get it online. I just want to know you guys' thoughts on that. Some of the language you're listening to, and then we can go to close at that point. By the way, I figured DC was gonna like the video. That's why I went on and tried to get it in real quick.
Go ahead, DC.
Well, I mean, white bombs matter. White military installations across the globe matter. This is done for a reason. I mean, it's not the reasons why you see airplanes fly over football games or gladiator sports. The reason why you have people walk out with guns at attention when they say the national anthem is behind this veil of so-called American independence, freedoms, or whatever you want to call it, is don't forget that we have this military system that is in place to kill innocent people. Which is kind of weird, by the way, how you can have that dissonance when you go to war and you could kill somebody that you do not know, and that it's okay because it's all done in the whole sense of the flag and, you know, whatever orders you got from a so-called general to go, hey, go kill that person that's over there. Shoot this person. Kill thousands of people. It's okay. You're doing it to protect America.
But don't you want to be able to go
always,
to Starbucks?
I always felt, well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, this is behind the veil of that. Like, you don't have that, or, you know, you don't have Starbucks, you don't have any of this, supposedly, without having these military operations ran around the world and here domestically. The whole veil of protection is all built on killing and maintaining the operational violence across the globe to maintain your safety, because you have done so much dirt globally.
Well, can you or T explain to me, can you connect me going to an NBA game, which I cannot afford? Maybe I can go to a Big Three game. Can you connect that, or going to the opera, or to a play at the Howard Theater? Can you connect me having the ability to do that with what you just said? Can y'all line that up and try to tie in the financiers of all of this, who's financing it all, the banking structure? Can someone tie it in a couple of minutes?
I really don't have anything at this moment. I would need more time.
I know you need more time. Just give us, you know, I mean, just real quick, because it's interesting that the sale is for me to go to Starbucks, for me to live in a house, the way it is, the amount of access I have to the world, that it requires a certain amount of killing for it to exist in this manifestation of itself.
Well, no, that is the so-called reality of it. The sell is that you don't know that that is needed for that to exist. You just think that it's all just all good-natured, you know, we deserve this because we are so-called Americans, and Americans' lives are more important than anybody else across the globe, no matter what they're doing.
Well, do you want to be the other people? But do you want to be the other people?
Do you want to be the other people, as far as,
do you want to be the Iraqi in this time frame? I know you don't want to be any of it, and it's a bit of a setup statement, but the alternative.
Yeah, I see what you did there, but then you forcing me into admitting that I love being what you would call pseudo protected while I'm under the prison system, which is called the United States of America.
Being it's a, that, that it's a this, hell of a prison.
Being, Yeah, it's a conundrum because in its essence, I don't like that effectively people that are here tend to view the world from the outside in from the inside out instead of the outside in. So there's a very different view. I would imagine that my view would be very, very different, hence more realistic if I was a person in so-called what is now the place that they now called Iraq or the Middle East, just the overall Middle East, by the way, which, you know, gets sanctioned, get bombs, you know, you're always running, doing different things. You have to live you have a different type of mindset. Hence, it depends on what family you're born in over there, too. So you have that going on also under the umbrella of the total system of racism, white supremacy. So that's a whole lot that I can't even answer. I can't answer that question, honestly, to be honest with you. I would imagine that I would prefer to be a little bit more aware of what the system is. And I think that viewing it from the outside in, you get a better view from the inside out, because clearly the victims of racism, which are classified as black people or people that are not white here, clearly not white, are very, very confused about what this system is and how it works, which, you know, still gets our full participation because we feel still like we feel like we have a stake in it, which would allow us to still do damaging things around the globe, which is detrimental to other people that are not classified as white globally, including people that look like us on other land masses across the planet.
Yeah, because I think our next program is going to kind of probably be around what are you willing to give up for justice? You know,
that's good.
Kind of looking at America.
That's a good subject. It's hard. It's hard because that's what I'm saying about.
People do a lot of talking. I've been to a lot of events. People look, you know, people look fed. I'm going to stop there. But go ahead.
If you listen to Jay-Z, if you listen to the album, that's the struggle. He's acutely aware of the criticisms that he received. He's not unaware of that. So he's very clear about what he's feeling and how people talk about him. So he cares, obviously, because he speaks to it. If you really look at his lyrics, he speaks about how people talking about him solving a problem and how can he solve the problem when he was a D-boy. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's so cracked now, he's one of the most popular rappers. And all of this is done through racism, white supremacy. It's all done through white people. This is not black people elevating him. Hence the reason why he talked about Jewish people being a role model, which clearly we know that Jewish people are not classified as black. They are not even classified as non-white anymore. Clearly the most powerful people that are in the cultural destination of Jewish are the ones that would be classified as white. I have never seen an Ethiopian Jew of any consequence say anything that is very, very to the contrary of what they are experiencing in Israel, basically saying that they have any kind of agency around the world. I haven't seen one that has a group politic to when we speak about Jews. They don't think about Ethiopian Jews, which is still directly related by bloodline and land, by the way, to those Jewish people that are classified as white. So help that make sense. If it's all about being Jewish, by the way. See, racism still trumps that. You see what I'm saying? No pun intended. Or maybe there is a pun intended in that. Interesting. But those are my thoughts, T. You got something you want to do to kind of finish it up here? I know we kind of all over the place, but hopefully we gave a constructive program. You got anything, T? What about you, Paradox? You wanted to give your closing thoughts on the program?
Oh, yeah. Well, again, we appreciate Black Talk Radio and Mr. Scotty Reed for the platform. As well, Dr. Tommy J. Curry's book is out, The Man Not. I do have it in my hand right now. It is a beautiful thing. And so I am starting to read through. Very good stuff. Glad he was able to produce it. And I think we definitely will have some discussions once we all finish reading it and get our notes together. There's a lot of references, man. It's unbelievable, really. A ton of references and citations and things that you can research beyond his book to give you some guidance on black male boys. Again, the name of the book is The Man, Not Race, Class, Gender, and the Dilemmas of Black Manhood, Tommy J. Curry. You can definitely get it online anywhere from you can. It's very easy to obtain at this point. I think the book is maybe about is it about 20 or 30 bucks? I forgot. But anyway, that's one thing as well. Make sure you go to blacktalkradionetwork.com. Check out the BTR community and other things on the website as well. Definitely do that. That's all I got. Do you have anything?
No, that's it. Just make sure that you remain constructive for everybody that's out there. Be safe. Stay away from the race soldiers as much as possible. And we are the Code Breakers. I am DC.
This is Paradox.
And T, hopefully he's not burning himself up with those hot dogs celebrating this, you know, this Independence Day for white supremacists. But until next time, we are the Code Breakers. Peace.